Hi, I'm Noah Bierman.
And I'm Jen Allen, and this is 149 Sessions.
Today, on part two of our discussion of how we experience music, we dig in further and talk about the physiological aspects of it.
Enjoy.
Morning, Jen.
Morning, Noah. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm eager to pick up where we left off talking about music and what it is and how we experience it. Some of the things you brought up last time have gotten me contemplating.
Oh, so
not that I necessarily have anything more interesting to say than I would have any other time that I just rolled out of bed, but but I'm eager to have the conversation nonetheless.
Well, I think that's a pretty high bar. You usually have a lot of good things to say. So, yeah. So what have you been thinking about?
Well, a couple things. I mean, one, I've been trying to figure out how to articulate what the physical sensation is of experiencing music, which for me has to be kind of distinct from the physical sensation of playing music, because that's not super pleasant for me with my physical issues, like just the physical act of touching an instrument or whatever.
Right.
But there's something about the sound waves when they are aligned just so that is profound, whether I'm on the giving or receiving end or in that cosmic place where I lose myself and can't even tell the difference anymore. I wouldn't say I get to that place real often as a player, but I taste it with just enough frequency to know that it's a thing. And it's sort of like, okay, well, if I can experience 5 minutes of bliss in a 3-hour gig, then maybe if I practice hard enough, it can be 6 minutes next time or whatever. I've never quantified exactly, and it's more of a continuum than a binary of like bliss versus agony or whatever. But I don't know. I mean, you're the one. I have more to say about that and then some other stuff too, but you're the one who brought up the idea of physically experiencing music. So I'm actually I've been curious what your take on that is, or your experience of that is.
Well, I guess it's funny because, when we decided we were going to talk about this again, I was, trying to recall some experiences. And most of the time, I would say it is emotional, but I think it comes out physical as well. So I don't want to separate those two things, you know.
Sure. Yeah, there's the physical experience of emotion,
right? And I think that that's really a lot of what it is most of the time for me, but not always. I don't know. Can you separate that? And our feelings in our body are so emotional, right? Like I'm trying
or
to.
Some of them are. I mean, if you hit yourself on the toe with a hammer, then the emotion is a response to the physical, whereas some physical things are manifestations of the emotional. And I certainly know that sometimes for me, I'm able to identify an emotion in part because of the consistency of the physical sensation. Mm-hmm. And it's usually negative emotions,
That's what I'm saying,
certain types of anxiety or being hit with something that's startling and scary. There's a certain way that my body reacts or like a crescendo of worry. There's certain ways that my body reacts where it's like, oh, okay, this is clearly what's happening right now because my mouth is dry and my breathing is constricted and so on.
Mm-hmm.
I do find, and this is, I don't think I have the words to describe this. I may try, but with the emotions brought on by music, that can also be a thing where there's just like a certain blissed out physical space that I can get into and that sort of represents the holy grail of why I endure all the things that are a drag about being a musician, to keep pursuing that and to keep hopefully teaching it in a way that gives other people access to that to a greater degree than they might have before.
Mm. Yeah.
But I don't know if I can, you know, there's a certain, I don't know, maybe it feels like I'm levitating or something. There's mm-hmm. a certain like infusion of joy and power that that I associate with those moments, whether it's hearing something that moves me or participating in creating something that goes into those places.
Yeah. Yeah. This is going to be so difficult to explain, but I don't know if I can separate any of the actual physical feelings from emotional things that happen in music.
You don't have to.
And I was thinking if I could, I was trying to figure out if I could, like while you were like talking, I was like trying to see if like any of that would, anyway. So I guess going back to what you asked, like for me, like I have experienced, a whole litany of actual physical emotions. And you kind of just touched on a couple of them, like, a relaxation, like a physical relaxation, mm-hmm. a kind of bliss kind of feeling, like a heightened mm-hmm. feeling. I remember one of the first times I listened to some orchestral music live that did that to me. And I just remember being, I don't even remember what the piece was, but I remember being moved by, I think, just the sound in the room and the vibrations, like, and that had that kind of effect on me that comes, right. You know, when from meditation or something. It's very similar in those kinds of ways. Like I like to connect music and the way it connects with me to meditation a lot, because I think they're very similar in my mind. Like how I feel when I'm very like free in my mind is also how I often feel when I'm listening to some music that moves me. It's a physical sensation. Mm-hmm. And then I've also felt a lot of physical like sadness and I've had a lot of music that kind of hits parts of me that makes me physically cry and ache. So
do you feel like the music is creating that, or it's sort of amplifying something within you that you didn't have access to before that moment?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I guess this is kind of going back to what we were talking about last time, like who's priming the pump, you know, like our life like setting us up as listeners to, you know, appreciate something. And I think that that is kind of the answer, just because I think in any situation, we have to be open to something to experience it.
Sure.
We have to be wanting to feel love, have our hearts open for that in order to experience it, right? And we have to be in that place to open to music or open to experience something, anything, if we're going to feel it. So if I was feeling sad from the music, maybe it had that in it, but maybe I also had places in me that I couldn't express with words that were coming out in that,
sure,
that way, in a physical, like either crying or ache or,
right.
I, you know, what would be interesting, actually, this has happened not too long ago. Someone shared a song with me and it was not in English. It had lyrics and stuff, but the song mm-hmm. itself really moved me and I had a physical sensation from it. And so I knew it wasn't the words because I had no idea right. what they were saying. So that's a really good example of that. But you could do this with nonverbal music too, you know, like things that don't have lyrics. And it happens. As I said, like oftentimes something about orchestral music really it hits me in places that I don't know if that has something to do with, you know, a stringed instrument was the first thing that I ever played. Mm-hmm. And I, like, some of the first music I ever listened to was orchestral music. And I don't know. I do believe that some of the first music that we listen to when we're young, and that actually moves us in any way, is often the stuff that we go back to and always will move us. So, and move us in like physical ways. Because I think when people are young, they're much more open to that unknown thing that's in music. Just like they just were unguarded. We don't have all the, you know, if we've had a semi-healthy upbringing, you know, you don't have the weight of the world on your shoulders as much as you do as an adult, and you don't overthink things. You know, you're just kind of going with it, and somebody plays something and you physically are moved to dance. Or you can see this, like, I love those little videos on YouTube of like little kids dancing. I get so much joy out of like watching like a 1-year-old or a 2-year-old doing that, or even like, yeah, like when they're really dancing, you know, and they're really feeling the music. There's just something so innate in us that, like, when we don't have any thought, that the music moves us to move our bodies, to have emotion. And so, it's an interesting, I don't know if I can dig any deeper. I really want to hear what you've been thinking about. And I think that those are like my experiences with it in a very quick synopsis of it, I guess.
I appreciate that. Well, I mean, there's some certain thoughts that have come to me just in response to you. You talk about your experience of an orchestra, and I vividly remember, this is before I had gotten to hear Ladysmith Black Mambazo live for the first time, which was a not dissimilar experience. But when I was a senior in high school, I went up to the University of Connecticut to hear Bobby McFerrin's Voicestra. And I was a big fan of Bobby McFerrin at that point. I had seen on TV, I mean, there was his like semi-cheesy pop crossover hit, but he had a bunch of solo performances that were shown on an A&E special on TV that I videotaped and watched over and over and over and over again. Most of those performances were also released on an album called Spontaneous Inventions. And it's really cool. But so it was just my first chance to hear Bobby McFerrin, but this was a then new group called Voicestra. I think it was a 12-piece choir. And the first song they did, he put out an album around that time called Medicine Music, which is mostly just him overdubbed a whole bunch of times. There's one track that he collaborated with Lyle Mays, the keyboardist who passed on recently. And then there's two tracks that are with Voicestra, one featuring his father, who is an opera singer. The other one, which is called Sweet in the Morning, that's literally the entire lyric. It's just like that over and over again, Sweet in the Morning. And they started singing that, and they layered sort of the bass, and then I guess the tenor and the alto, and they sort of one voice at a time, they started layering this sort of chant, and then they went into the next section of the song where they all sang a chord together, and I just felt it. I had never experienced that before, where I just like felt my body vibrate with that. And I feel like, I don't know if this distinction is useful, but I had heard music that had moved me before on an emotional level, and where I experienced physical sensations stemming from an emotional response to something, whether it was sadness or joy or this indescribable thing. I mean, the first time I heard James Williams' Magical Trio 2 album, there was just something, it felt, and I may have described this in another episode early on, but that was months ago, so I don't know. But but it felt as if I remember this children's book, and I don't remember what the book was, maybe one of our listeners will know, where one of the kids, the main character of the book, fantasized about discovering a new color. And I felt like I had done that. Like I felt like, and it was not like this was totally unique music, but it was the first thing that I heard that evoked this beautiful musical color that was up until that moment totally foreign to me. And I had experienced that before, but I feel like on some level, my entire path as a jazz musician in the 25 years since that moment stemmed from, or 24 years, stemmed from that moment of hearing the sounds on that record and perceiving there was this universe of sound and emotion, and I didn't even try at the time to distinguish them. And there was a feeling that I had that is essentially the same feeling I've been trying to get to every time I've made music in that, under that broad umbrella of jazz since then, of this, I won't bother trying to describe what the feeling is, but it's sort of an elation, like a not just joy, but an exhilaration, and this sense of attunedness to all that is and beauty and so on. And I'll get back to that in a minute. But when I went to this Bobby McFerrin concert, that was an unprecedented experience for me because it was emotionally compelling music. There were a couple songs I remember. They did that one, and they did a song called The Garden, which on that same album is all, like, you know, a bazillion Bobby McFerrin's overdubbed. And those two, the whole concert was good, but those two songs just really, like, hit me. But that first song, it was the physical part was the source and not just the reaction. Mm-hmm. Like, there was something about those frequencies vibrating through my body was a chamber through which this sound was vibrating. And there are certain, you know, certain choirs. We went to see the Soweto Gospel Choir this past fall. And it was mostly, I normally don't say negative things. It was mostly kind of disappointing because they were singing a lot of American songs. Mm. Yeah. And that's not what we wanted to hear. But when they sang the South African stuff, it was similar. And hearing Ladysmith Black Mambazo is similar, where the combination of the frequencies and just the size of the sound vibrates throughout my body. Wow. So whereas by contrast, when I've heard Sweet Honey in the Rock, it's one of the most moving experiences I've ever had, but there aren't enough of them to vibrate in that way. And hearing an incredible, you know, hearing Kenny Garrett and Kenny Kirkland play with Jeff Tane Watts and Matt Reeves, that was incredibly moving and made me feel all kinds of things physically, but it wasn't, well, I think it was border, just the sheer power and sitting really close to them, which you don't often get to do when you hear other styles of music. There's something, I'm sort of going in circles, so I apologize, but I guess my point is there's lots of music I've heard that has moved me, but the physical response being a thing in and of itself beyond
Go ahead, finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Well, I guess that, like, there's feeling an emotion that causes a physiological response, and then there's something about the actual physical sound, which has to be large to, I mean, I guess you can experience certain other physical emotions through something that's very hushed and intimate, but I guess all of which is thinking about the idea of hearing orchestral music and how when you hear an orchestra live in a hall or a large choir, I mean, on some level, you know, when you hear a large choir, you could have four singers and all the parts would be covered. Mm-hmm. But something about that sheer number of voices and the way the sonorities connect with each other creates vibrations that are experienced differently than other things. I mean, that's why there's big surround sound systems in movie theaters or whatever, because you're supposed to feel the sound as much as you hear it.
Or even like a rock concert or a pop concert. Like I went to see, Stevie Wonder, and I went to see Sting live, and I remember them being so loud. Sting wasn't as bad. Stevie Wonder was so loud that it was like painful. But
well, and I guess, like, to me, that's not even necessarily feeling a good emotion. It's sort of, you're just being pummeled with sound. And and to me, and I had seen a lot of, before the Bobby, I'm sorry to interrupt, but before I saw the Bobby McFerrin concert, I had seen a lot of rock concerts. Like I was a teenager who, you know, like probably a couple dozen like you know, 5 to 20,000 seat theater or stadium shows up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, and this was different because those things, there's something artificial about it. So you're getting a large amount of sound, but you're hearing the amplification of the sound and you're sitting very, really far away and it's optimized for that. And that's, you know, that's can be exciting in its own way. But hearing this where I really felt like I was just absorbing these human voices through my body rather than absorbing stuff going through amplifiers that are like pounding my ear canals.
Well, I think that that's like the, you know, that's just the physical nature of sound. Like sound waves have power to feel to move our bodies. I mean, I've talked to people who like, what's the kind of music that's like, I can't remember what it's called at the second, at this moment. It's like, it's like club music and I can't think
like
of the name.
House music.
I don't know, but it's so loud, you know,
EDM.
EDM. That's what I was thinking of. Like, but you know, they like, I was talking to somebody who really liked it once and I was like, well, tell me what you really like about it. And they're like, 'cause I feel it. Like the whole point is for it to be loud and to like kind of numb your body in ways.
Right.
Which is interesting. Like I don't like that, but it's interesting to kind of think about.
Right.
And then, you know, another, if we're just talking pure like sound waves that like give us feelings, this is kind of ridiculous that I probably haven't experienced this before last year, but this happened last year at a recording session I was doing and I was in an ISO booth with like a piano, a beautiful grand piano and a organ and a Rhodes. And it was just like so nice. And it was just like, but it was a closed in room. So I couldn't really hear the other musicians, you know, other than putting on my headphones. And I put my headphones on, which kind of closed off sound a little bit from the room. And my the piano was not coming through my headphones yet. And I started playing the piano and I don't know if I was just more in tune with it or it was because of the headphones or whatever, but all of a sudden I could feel the sound through my fingers from the piano. And I had never experienced that before. And I felt kind of gypped all of a sudden. I was like, wait a second. This has been available to me the whole time. And like, I didn't know that. And I'm like, am I just more open to it? Am I being quieter? Is the room quieter? Are the headphones? I had no idea what it was. But ever since then, I've been much more in tune to actually feeling the sound coming out of the piano. And I have to tell you, it's like heightened my playing in terms of my experience of playing since then. Which, again, I felt kind of gypped. I was like, nobody's ever told me this could happen. And so even just that physical feeling of the sound or the vibration coming through the keys has made me experience music in a more physical way instead of just through my ears, even though that's a physical thing too. I mean, it's like a more tactile experience and not just the hitting of it, but like a vibration thing that kind of comes through my fingertips, which I just thought was very interesting. I don't know if you've had that feeling.
I was really fortunate a couple years ago to spend a little bit of time with Evelyn Glennie. Are you familiar with?
No.
So, well, you can, I'll remind you of this afterwards, but you need to see the documentary Touch the Sound, which is about her. So she's probably the most prominent orchestral percussionist.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. I haven't seen this.
She's profoundly deaf and has learned how to play and play with other people through this heightened attunedness to the vibrations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really kind of incredible.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess ideally for me, the perfect balance is where there's something about these vibrations that's moving, and something intrinsic to the music itself that's moving emotionally. Mm. And then it all comes together and you've basically got this immersive experience. I mean, I'm working with the wonderful Josh Quassman on mixing my Love Right album. We're almost done mixing. And it's kind of incredible when I put headphones on and listen to what he's doing with the mixes. And I'm like, I mean, I'm biased, obviously, because it's music that I wrote about emotionally or arranged in a few cases about, you know, emotionally intense things. But like the way he's constructing this sort of physical experience is really interesting and moving. But I've had the experience where there's that kind of sonic experience and the musical experience is ho-hum.
Yeah.
You know, hearing a great choir sing songs that I think are boring.
Right.
And so I'm having the physical experience just from the sound waves, but not the emotional experience that comes from something touching me in the music. And I've had the opposite experience where something, I listened to that same Bobby McFerrin song on a crappy little portable speaker. Mm-hmm. So I'm getting the musical part of it, but there's not enough high quality information coming to my ears to reverberate through my body. And so I tend to be someone who's much more, at least in my own practice as a musician, much more concerned with finding those emotional places. And, you know, when I'm orchestrating, I suppose, I think about those physiological experiences to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not a moving piece of music in the first place, then I'm interested in optimizing something that is already inherently moving or that I believe to be inherently moving, as opposed to pursuing the physiological part as an entity unto itself.
Right.
And I'm a glass half full look at having Ehlers-Danlos syndrome is that it makes me really tuned in, I think, to those moments when I transcend my own body, which is a pretty blissful experience because actually being in it is not so much fun all the time.
Right,
and
right.
I had one gig in particular. Stop me, podcast listeners, if I've told you this one before. Don't think I have. But in 2004... I played my first gig as an adult. I had known him as a teenager with Vinny Spiraza, who wound up being the drummer in my trio for 10 years. We played mostly standards, I think all standards. We didn't play any of my material yet. And I just felt like for 3 hours I was physically transcending my body. And it was really interesting because the way we were getting into the music and some of the complex stuff we were doing made me play a lot of piano. So if we measure by how many notes did I play, how many piano keys did I strike over the course of 3 hours, it was a greater number than would have been typical for me at that time.
Right.
But because I was not experiencing resistance, and quite the contrary, I was experiencing the uplift of like buoyant, exciting rhythm and flow, really.
Right.
Like everything I did flowed because there was nothing in what Vinny and Henry were playing that inhibited my pursuing ideas. I didn't have to back up and be like, okay, here's beat one, and so at the end of it, I felt physically so much better than I usually did after a shorter gig with fewer notes per second. And it was this really profound moment of realizing how much the flow was impact the presence or absence of flow was impacting my physical experience of the music, and how playing for an hour with an unsympathetic or less competent rhythm section would make me feel really physically beat up, not just tired, but like abused, really.
Yeah.
Like my body felt just like sore. And after doing this, you know, it's not like it's the magic bullet where if I'm playing with a good rhythm section, my body loses all limitations and I don't hurt anymore. But it makes a huge difference. And that also retroactively helped me realize like that quality in the most moving recorded music. You know, there's just something about it. And the other thing I've been thinking about is what kind of music puts me in that place. And I'll get to that in a minute. But but when music is in that place that for me hit, you know, is on that, on the wavelength that vibrates with my personhood, my consciousness, I don't know what to call it, then it's a really, I can only describe it, or I can best describe it at least, as a transcendent experience. Mm-hmm. And I'm transcending my body. I'm transcending my worries and concerns. I'm transcending, to a certain extent, my mundane earthly existence and mm-hmm. touching, for whatever period of time, touching something lofty and divine, I guess. And it doesn't mean, you know, it could even be a song with stupid lyrics or whatever. It could, and or not, but there's just something about the combination of elements that feels liberating. And I think most people who love music as much as I do experience that, but I suspect that because my earthly bodily experience is not a real pleasant one, the distinction is really noticeable.
I think that,
and honestly, that is the thing that has kept me from quitting playing. The day I stop experiencing that, I'm gonna hang it up, because it's just such a gift to even know there's the possibility that I will experience a moment of that when I sit down to play.
Yeah. Well, I think we have our next podcast. I was like, because I think the flow, like, how do we get into that flow? Like, how do we allow ourselves to get into that? Because that's a tricky thing. Just as a person in general, you don't have to be a musician to do it. Anyway, okay. I don't want to get off on that now, but that's another topic.
We'll save that for next time, because that's for a subsequent time. Okay, I'm hip.
Yeah, but you said you had some other. You were
well. Yeah, I'm going to put this as a question to you first before I reveal my own thoughts about this. Okay. But do you, in terms of the capacity for a piece of music or for an artist to put you in that place, assuming we're on the same page, and it seems like we are, about this sort of transcendent joy. And I mean joy, not even in a happiness, maybe just transcendence, because sometimes it's transcendent grief or mm-hmm. Sorrow, right. You know, it's just some way of experiencing something deeply that we can't quite get to through other means, and that music allows us to more fully live by experiencing. So assuming we're on the same page that that's a thing, mm-hmm. and that some music does that for us and some music doesn't do that for us.
Right.
I guess I have two questions, and which will eventually come back to me, because of course everything does. Which is to say, I have my own thoughts about these two things, but without those preconceptions or biases, I'm curious. One, you can answer these in any order or combine it if they're relevant. Do you feel like there's something innate in you that governs what music connects with you in that way, and what music you might appreciate but remains emotionally at arm's length? Is there something innate in you that governs that versus just mm-hmm. you're a product of your environment and your conditioning and so on?
Right.
And for you, is it like if you picture a 45 degree angle, is it for you a continuum where every piece of music is somewhere on there, and, you know, it could be moving and transcendent anywhere on a scale of 1 to 100, and, you know, and listening to something that's a 57 is better than a 55, but not as good as a 59, and sort of, you know, the higher the better, but it's just a really steady continuum.
You're asking me if I think there is a continuum like that.
For you, okay. Is there a continuum, or is there more of like a cutoff point where it's like anything beneath this, forget about it?
Oh, gosh. Well, to address
that. You can answer either or both of those.
I don't know about that one yet. I'd have to think about that. And the first one was...
is there something innate in you governing what moves you?
I mean, I want to say yes. Like, that's my first, like, initial response to that. But it is hard to separate, like, our product of our environment, or, you know, like, I don't know. Am I a product of my environment? Of course I am. But at my core, I think that there are things that... that are just me, you know, like if we talk about our core being, there are things that I came into this world ready to receive or ready to bring. And I think music, certain music, is the way I connect to that part of me, or vice versa, how I connect to the certain kinds of music, you know, though I can appreciate, heavy metal or something like that. It's not, it doesn't speak to me, you know, and, and it doesn't mean I would listen to it, you know, but there's something that's not connected to who I am. So yeah, I think that there are things, because, you know, separate, I think we've already addressed this today, that separate from our thoughts about things, music can reach into those things that are separate than our, it's like our subconscious or our unconscious parts of us that, you know, I think music touches, just like you can see it in that little kid dancing or whatever. And so I think that there, or in, even in babies in utero, they talk that babies are responding to music. And so there's something really innate and something in us. So I think, yes. I guess as I talk this out loud, like I'm convincing myself that yes, I think that there are certain things I connect with more. And the continuum, I don't personally look at it that way. So, but maybe I do that without even thinking, you know, there's certain things that if I had to put them on a list of like, what do I feel more moved by, you know, like I could, but then there's, I don't do it intentionally. Let's just say that, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you've thought about this. I want to hear what you think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know that I'm a list maker, so those kinds of things, happen anyway, but I think what's interesting to me, so this is going to seem random and tangential, but it will of course come back. Some years ago, almost 10 years ago, Kate and I did the Grand Middletown Pete's Experiment, where we ate a cheese pizza at every place in our city of Middletown, Connecticut, where you could get a cheese pizza, and had this four-tiered or four criteria grading system, and then we ranked them all and blogged about it. At this point, half of them have changed ownership or gone out of business and been replaced by other things. So we're not going to do it again because we just don't eat that much pizza, which leads me to why I bring this up, is that we determined that there's a lot of B+ pizza.
Yes, there is.
And for some people, that's great. And we just don't eat enough pizza for a B+ pizza to be relevant to our lives.
Yeah.
And therefore, the distinction between a B+ and a B pizza, or a high B+ and a low B+ pizza, is ultimately kind of beside the point for us, because we just don't it's not a relevant experience to us unless it's above a certain level.
Right.
Whereas there's other things mm-hmm. where a lower quality or less enjoyable version of the same thing is still good enough to be worth it.
Right.
You know, if you're bored enough on an airplane, a mediocre movie is going to pacify you well enough to get the job done.
Right,
the fact
right.
that it's not Ben-Hur doesn't matter. And so what I'm realizing for myself is that that's kind of become true for me with music as well.
Mm.
I've been thinking a bit about like some of the really mediocre music that I listened to when I was a kid, because that's what I had access to or
right.
a teenager.
Lots of that for my life too.
Yeah. And it was like, yeah. and I listen back to it now and there's a certain nostalgic fondness, but I'm like, you know, this is the best I could come up with at the time.
Right.
But at this stage in my life, either making music or listening to music, and I think some of this is my physical stuff and some of it maybe isn't, but like there are the bar is pretty high for me at this point for how good a gig needs to be for me to not regret that I left my house to do it. This is all speaking as if leaving your house to do a gig was still a thing.
someday,
maybe someone will be listening to this somewhere in the future where it is again. And
yeah.
they'll think, what is he talking about? Oh yeah, I remember that.
The pandemic.
But yeah, assuming that I could still go out and do a gig, there's just a lot of gigs that are objectively perfectly fine, but not transcendent enough or not likely enough to be transcendent. And maybe it's the musicians and maybe it's other circumstances, like what kind of an audience environment it is or whatever, that limit it from being able to be, you know, a 93 or above on a scale of 100, and 92 is still an A minus, and an A minus is objectively good, but it's not good enough to be worth it for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm finding that as I get older and grumpier,
why does that have to be that way?
I'm sorry. I'm choosing to become a curmudgeon. In any case, older and tireder, let's say.
Okay.
I find that I just have less, if we're talking about personal enjoyment, I mean, it's different if we're talking about pursuing appreciation for something or being respectful to somebody or whatever. But if it's just a matter of, is this going to move me? The bar is pretty high at this point, and something that's not quite at that bar, I just have a hard time making myself keep listening at this point, which I find interesting.
Well, like, isn't that kind
so
of
me,
wisdom though? Like, just,
I don't know.
Like,
we have
a lower tolerance for people who have like a lot of BS, and I'm just like, yeah, I don't have time for that in my
sure.
life. Sure. Like,
we're talking, well, and I guess that's, if we think about this continuum that we're talking about, like that continuum does exist for me, but like the pizza experiment, if it's not at least an A minus, I don't care. Like an 89 out of 100 is objectively really good.
Yeah.
but the difference between an 89 and a 70 for me at this point is kind of beside the point, because in both cases, I would rather do something else entirely
right.
and be in silence than listen to it.
Right.
And that feels really dismissive and intolerant for me, but I wanted to own that aspect for me, that the flip side of my joy that comes with the transcendent possibilities in music is that if it's not getting to that place, I would really rather just not be bombarded with sound and would rather just like listen to the leaves flapping in the breeze
yeah.
or whatever.
Which is very
and,
nice.
As far as the innate, connection to music, I have mixed feelings about it, and it's something I've been thinking about a lot. Lately, just had a conversation about this with a former student of mine yesterday. I believe that it is possible to appreciate and enjoy something through a cultivated process of
yes.
exposure and discovery and so on. And some of the music that moves me the most is stuff that required me to go through a process like that. But there was, and then there's other stuff that I appreciate and don't necessarily love or find moving, but it's not unpleasant to me. And right. I find things of value in it. But as far as something that's going to move me and like touch on that transcendence, all the stuff that I've learned to love had those traits in it, and it was sort of a language barrier that kept me from immediately seeing that, if that makes sense. So it's sort of like when I didn't understand the sounds of modern jazz because I was too young and inexperienced, I couldn't see how John Coltrane was communicating the emotions that already moved me in Muddy Waters or Stevie Wonder.
Right.
And then there's a lot of stuff that isn't trying to say the same things, or it's sort of, you know, like the, it's not that I don't have the language for it. It's that I have the language for it. And it's just speaking in a thing, in a way that doesn't move me so much. And I find that really interesting. I mean, dating even back to how much exposure I got to European classical music as a young person, and how it was fine and I appreciated it. I even, you know, got familiar enough with it that I became like a sort of little, I don't know, circus act boy where where my mother would put something on and I'd figure out at least, I'd be able to make an educated guess what time period it was from and what composer it might be and so on. But it was never, like I never put on Schubert and like did an involuntary scrunching up of my face because it was just filling my body with something intense. And, and you know, when I first heard Stevie Wonder, I was like, holy crap, like that, you know, like there was something coursing through my body that was unlike anything I'd experienced before. And, and there were some things that were sort of in between, you know, I had a lot of exposure through my sister to the Grateful Dead, and there were certain innate things in that that moved me, but a lot of it was exposure and that it was like cooler than other stuff I had heard up until that point. But when I started, I mean, it's not entirely a racial thing, but there are, for me, there are things that are derived from the blues that touch me in a way that things not coming from that place are less likely to touch me. And I was listening yesterday because I was playing this for my class, to, I wound up subsequently binging on Sly and the Family Stone. And I remember hearing them for the first time when I was maybe 15 and just like, you know, my mind exploding, just feeling these rhythms and hearing the soulful way they sang and so on. And some of their songs are really profound and some of them are really kind of stupid. Yeah. And, I mean, you know, the song Fun is not one of their deep ones. but, you know, there's still,
no, it's still scrunching Larry up Graham's his face right now. Still,
yeah. I'm scrunching up my face right now. I'm like, anyway, and so I've always found it interesting, and it's, and again, it's not like, it's not like white musicians can't do that for me. And it's not like even music that isn't blues derived can't do that for me. When I listen to early to mid 70s Joni Mitchell, it puts me in a similar place in terms of how emotionally transcendent I find it to be. But I find it, it's interesting, like how I had so much exposure to classical music, but it was just clear that it's something that I could appreciate, but it wasn't my sound. And I think we've talked about that before, maybe, but I, and as an adult, I have similar experiences where like multiple friends of mine will say, and I'm not going to name artists cause I don't want to talk smack about anybody, but, they'll say, oh, they'll multiple people who I respect and with whom I have musical common ground will express their devotion to somebody and they'll be like, okay, let me try again. And I, you know, and give you my, my fifth listen. And I'm like, you know, this is cool, but it's just, it's not speaking to me. And in those moments, it almost makes me doubt, like, am I still an emotionally tuned in person? And then I'll be like, let me check, let me put on this Al Green thing. And then, you know, after 20 seconds of Al Green, I'm like practically rolling on the floor because it's like, I've become possessed essentially through the experience of listening to it.
Yeah.
And I know that it'll hurt me to roll on the floor, so I don't literally do that, but I feel like doing so.
Yeah.
You know, when love and happiness, I'm like, ah, woo! And,
that's great. He's having a physical emotion right now. Physical
exactly.
Feeling,
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's nice to hear you talk about that. And I agree. I think that that's,
do you have that experience too? And I'm not asking you to name names, at least not while we're rolling tape, but
about friends who say stuff. Like, oh, is that what you're
talking about? Where it's like, well, I mean, I guess we've already had that experience with me trying to get you into the Grateful Dead, but,
I just couldn't.
This is assuming that you respect my taste in music.
I do. And we agree on a lot of stuff, but not necessarily on that.
We do.
I think that that's why it's so like, it's just, I think it's, there's this connection, just like why we like certain people. Like, why are we friends and other people I'm not friends with? You know, like, I don't know. Like, there's something in our core being that we are simpatico about stuff. And same with the right. music. And so,
Do you find yourself, I guess I try to strike a balance where, because I'm an analytical person, trying to quantify those things, like, okay, these are the people who I'm closest to. What are the traits that define that? And I'll do that with music too, you know, like, okay, this music moves me. This music is fine, but it's just not speaking to me. Like, what? And I feel some obligation to do that so that I can identify music that I should be exploring more because it possesses those traits, or especially so that I can define my own values more, precisely. Like, okay, I'm trying to create music and I know that the music that moves me has these component parts, or I know that I've identified that these are the traits I value in people. So am I acting like a person who has those traits,
right,
in this circumstance? And yet, sometimes you just can't quite explain it. And it is just sort of the magic, for lack of a better term, at least for me, of like, okay, you know, this is clicking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or this isn't, even though on paper it feels like it should.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't make as many lists as you do. But that's where we're, that's how we differ. But that's, I also tend to be somebody who likes to not close off. And I'm not saying you do this. I'm just saying that I wouldn't want to make a list of, say, these are the things I like, and then not listen to something because it doesn't fit into that, you know, like, so, and I would be tempted to do that if I made a list like that. And so I try to keep like a side door open. So like, oh, somebody suggested this, like I did that on Instagram recently. I just was like, hey, give me some new music. And I had about like, I don't know, 15, 20 new things to listen to. I didn't like them all, but I found a couple that I was interested in, you know, and that's the thing. And like, and these were all people that I thought were great musicians and have interesting ideas about things. And I want to hear that. And I think that that's, for me, it's really important to listen to other things. Cause I could listen to Stevie Wonder all day and I would just listen to that, you know, but I need to be open to hear the other stuff. So I don't know, that's not what you were exactly saying, but that's just how I go about it.
Yeah. I don't know if you're fine. It seems like you might be having the opposite experience from me right now in pandemic times, where you're really hungry to discover new sounds. And I'm finding that in the sort of emotional and cognitive space of pandemic times, I'm having to work harder to do that. Like, I keep, letting people in on a little trade secret, because Generally, at the end of the year, Jen and I both appear as guest panelists on WNPR on the Colin McEnroe Show, discussing our favorite jazz recordings of the year. I've taken to having a running playlist where
I started doing that too. Like,
so where I'm like starting at the beginning and like keeping a log of the new stuff that that I want to listen to. And obviously, it's not all of it because you know I would be listening 24/7. But it's actually, and I try, you know, so, okay, if I've got an hour to listen to music, let me go down the list and this next one is in queue. And I'm having a harder time doing that, even though some of the new music that I've got queued up is great because I sort of need a little more comfort food. And even if there's some statistical chance that the new such and such album could provide that, if it doesn't do that for me in the first 90 seconds, then I'm like, you know what? Now is not the time for personal growth. Gotcha. Now is the time to listen to Court and Spark for the fourth time this month. And,
I do that too, though. I have a bunch that I listen to over and over. So yeah, but I have been itching to get some new stuff. So, but I totally can appreciate your need for that comfort. So,
and I guess, that's another, maybe the last for today example of that kind of physical experience is that even if there's all kinds of other emotional physiological ways that we might relate to a piece of great music, at a certain point, once we've developed a relationship with it, there's a familiarity infused comfort also, and I find that to be an interesting component. So, like, I spent 2 hours a couple days ago. I was multitasking at the time, I will admit, but listening to an early '70s Grateful Dead album, actually a couple of them, and at that moment I was not thinking about the being a growing artist, and I was not thinking about being an erudite pedagogue.
Right.
I was really just like, I need some comfort food, and this feels like home right now.
Right. No, that's important.
It was, and I guess it's. I mostly try to push myself out of that because every new sound I encounter is an opportunity to broaden and deepen my knowledge and my relationship with music. But I think for most people, there's that thing, and maybe there's a lot of them, but there's some music that they just go back to because, you know, it feels like a warm blanket or a teddy bear or something. And it's funny how that can be so much about personal experience and not the, you know, it could be that for someone that's like a Slayer album or something.
Right. Exactly. Like,
but their relationship with that is one of taking them to a good place, even if the music itself is not comforting by its inherent nature.
Right. For sure. Yeah.
All right.
I think we're there.
I think we're there.
We have,
thanks, Jen.
Lots to talk about next time. Thank you, Noah.
We do. It seems that it always works out that way. I guess that's why we haven't come to the final episode yet.
That's right. All right. Take care.
Okay. You too. Thank you.